Hey, welcome to the Off-Leash Podcast with Dr. Pete. I'm Dr. Pete. I'm glad you've joined us today. We got a good show worked up for you. And just remember, we're here to be an advocate for your pet.
That's right. Always an advocate for the animal first.
Yep.
And I am your co-host, Molly. We got a lot of good topics to get into today. The first being old dogs, new tricks. And we're going to talk about chewable medications. Right, Dr. Pete?
Yes, we are. This chewable medication, it's been going on probably for, I don't know, years, 15, 20 years that we've had chewable medications, chewable Rimadyl, chewable heartworm preventative, HeartGuard, Interceptor, all those things. And I think one of the things we kind of worry about sometimes is not whether the dog likes it, although that is a concern. Some dogs, if they think it came from the veterinarian's office, they wouldn't need it if their life depended on it, and sometimes it does. But anyway, the thing I wanted to tell you is some of the early medications were heavily laden with beef, sometimes milkway, things like that. And I don't think the pet food industry, or actually the pharmaceutical industry, thought that if we do this, that we may be creating some allergies.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing. We had a little meeting last night with the folks from Zoetis, and that was one of the questions on a little trivia question they gave us test. And he said, well, what's Trio made of? Simparica Trio. That's the heart preventative. Mm-hmm. It has Simparica and parental pamoate and moxidectin in it. And it's a pork diet. It's a pork pill, I should say.
Right.
And the pork pill, actually about maybe less than 2% of the dogs are going to be allergic to protein if they have, those are the food allergy dogs.
Just if remember, they have a protein allergy.
Yeah, so right. Only about 20% of them have food allergies. So when you back it down to 2% of that, you're looking at 0.2%. So the Trio is something probably I wouldn't worry too much about those dogs being allergic to that. They don't usually contain an awful lot of protein. Sometimes there's a little more flavoring in there than mm-hmm. there is protein. So the flavoring, I think I've talked about this before, is that the protein is the portion you're actually going to be allergic to.
Rather than the other ingredients.
Well, other than fat.
How often do dogs have allergies to other medications? Like just the drug part of the pill?
They have more side effects than allergic reactions. So okay. That may give them diarrhea or may cause them to vomit. Technically, the vomiting thing is probably an allergy. Where they get all puffy in the face after they take a pill, yeah. That hardly ever happens.
Okay.
If they get diarrhea, that's an adverse event. If they vomit, that's an adverse event. If they
right.
have really gas or it kills their appetite. Like one of the pills that probably is the hardest on their stomach is doxycycline.
Yeah.
Doxycycline, if you've ever taken that in an espresso coffee, you better lay down and take a nap because it's going to bother you a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. I just actually gave my dogs, I was at your house yesterday. Yep. I gave my dogs their flea and ticks medication because it's getting warmer out, and mm-hmm. I have pulled several ticks off my dogs in the past week.
You shouldn't be pulling any off.
I know.
So in Michigan, which is where we live, I'm not too sure. It used to be a 9-month season. This has been kind of a mild winter. I'm going to guess
it's been such a mild winter.
Yeah, before you start trying to think this thing over, it's probably a 12-month deal.
Yeah.
Because really in the 36 degrees Fahrenheit when they come out of the soil.
Yep.
It was 36 every single month this year.
I know. I like to save a little bit of money and not give my dogs a flea and tick during the winter.
Don't do that.
But it's been so mild, I just have to.
You have to do what you have to do. Yeah,
because I'd rather. So I was going to ask that too. Lyme disease. I know you can get a shot to prevent it, right?
Yes.
A shot. But if you don't give your dog the flea and tick stuff, will it actually prevent Lyme?
Well, by giving the vaccine and using the flea and tick stuff, the flea and tick stuff all by itself is usually enough to prevent you from getting Lyme disease.
Okay.
So what you have is you have a safety net by using the vaccine. And if somebody's going to be off it for a while, maybe the vaccine's not a bad idea. But I see this more as, in fact, with your dogs, I didn't know you had ticks on your dogs, but if you have ticks on your dogs.
They weren't attached. They were just
walking
on my
around,
dogs.
Taking a tour. So I think the one thing you want to do is if you find them attached, you give that dog a dose or two of doxycycline.
Oh, okay.
That's what One Health says. You should always give, why wait for this to turn into something?
Right.
Because
right.
once it turns into something, now you got a whole different problem.
Spring's right around the corner. We should do a whole episode on flea and tick and Lyme disease.
Yeah, it's been quite a story. And I think I've discussed this with you before that, we had lots and lots of topicals that we used, and most of them worked good, and then they didn't. And
right.
And we got new topicals, and they worked good, and then they didn't. Mm-hmm. Even they had a pill one time called Proban, where you gave a Proban pill twice a week. It was an organophosphate, which was really kind of...
It's a...
Organophosphate. It was a class of drugs.
Okay.
It didn't make anybody very sick, but it was, you know, probably not something you'd really want to give it. I mean, compared to the safety of the stuff we're using now, it's pretty barbaric when we stop and think about it. The old dips we had, the Paramite dips and those things, chlorinated hydrocarbons or, you know, which were pretty toxic, or organophosphates were, you know, some of those dogs, we used to use Amitraz to kill Demodex, which is a little mite that looks like a cigar that lives in dogs' hair follicles. And those dogs got sedate when we gave them that stuff.
Are those still around?
Yeah, they're still around.
What?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
It was really a godsend when it first came to light with us, because we were using Coraline, which was an organophosphate, and we were mixing it up with isopropyl alcohol and propylene glycol and this stuff, and it would go one-third, 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 and then... The Coraline is what we're using. That's bad stuff. And the dog would stink like hell. But you could only paint one-third of the dog every couple of days. So you'd do the back part, paint it with like a little dauber thing. And,
okay.
And that dog get a little bit sick. And then you go next day or 2 days later, you do the middle third and then the front third and go back to the back third again.
Medication's come a long ways.
Well, you know, it's the only thing we had to really kill those things. And then when ivermectin came out, then we used ivermectin. Injections of ivermectin or oral ivermectin, and you had to use massive doses of that every day, and sometimes you'd be on 30, 40, 50 days of that. Sometimes the dog system would get tired of that.
I love Simparica Trio. Yep. It just hits all three.
Yeah.
You give it once a month.
Yep, yep. And it really works well. Does a great job on intestinal parasites. Does a great job on ticks. By the way, it actually cured scabies and Demodex, so we don't see...
Really?
It used to be we'd see some of these pit bulls and... Sometimes even Rottweilers, Dobermans would be born with Demodex.
What is Demodex?
It's a little cigar-shaped insect.
Okay, the insect.
It lives in the hair follicle.
I'm going to have to look these up, Demodex.
Yeah, it's a parasite. You know, it lives in the hair follicle. It's a little cigar-shaped thing with a little teeny tiny legs. And then it defecates into the hair follicle, and then you get... Hair follicle gets unhappy and then secretes a whole bunch of sebum out, which is, you know, the oil on your forehead and stuff. And then you get a staph infection. So when these new things came out, like NexGard, Simparica, Bravecto, Credelio, all those things, I mean, this stuff. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I haven't seen a case of Demodex in 4 or 5 years.
Ew, it says that you probably have Demodex mites living on your face.
Yeah.
And they stick in your eyelashes.
There's sort of a normal part of the flora, and people get that, yep. But we'd see it in ears and cats every once in a while, and you'd have to use, geez, what were we using for that? It was Advantage. I think we were using Advantage Multi, and that had the moxidectin in it, and that would kill the Demodex mites. Oof. But you have to do a scrape to see them. You can't see them with the naked eye. You have to do a skin scrape.
Yeah.
All you do is pull that stuff. You scrape. Put scrapings onto a slide, put mineral oil on it, look it under a microscope. Yeah, I know what it looks like.
No, it's showing that this is what they're like on people.
Oh, yeah.
They live in your eyelashes.
Yeah. That's probably third world country stuff. I don't think that occurs here much.
I don't know. It says that many people live with them on their hair follicles and their eyelashes, but normally nobody knows about them because for humans, they don't cause a lot of problems.
Well, kiddo, you got things to worry about. That's probably not one of them.
That was one of my things when I used to work at the vet clinic, and people would take swabs of anything human related, and then we'd look at them under the microscope. It was horrible.
Yeah. Well, you know what? When I was in college, we had a parasitology lab, and the instructor said, you should all bring a stool sample from your cat or your dog in, and we'll do a flotation, spin it down and see if any of your dogs or cats have intestinal parasites. So some gal in the class ahead of us, unbeknownst to us, she brings in a stool sample, has it analyzed, and the instructor's looking at this, and he's looking at this, and he's looking at this, and he says, is this a dog's stool or a cat's stool? And she goes, and she kind of sheepishly looks at the table like I'm looking now, and goes, it's my stool. And he says, well, these are banana seeds. That's what these are.
Oh, my gosh.
So we had he was looking at banana seeds. But he'd done enough primate work that he knew what banana seeds looked like when you looked at the thing here.
That's funny.
Yeah.
You could give your dog bananas. That shouldn't stick out too much.
No, I mean, it's not going to cause any problems, but we were looking for intestinal parasites, yeah. and she thought she had something real unique here. Like maybe she'd been overseas or something. She thought she contracted something. I have no idea. I have no idea if they instruct you when you're in college, you're sort of at their beckoning call to do what they ask you to do.
Yeah.
And she was just brazen enough to go ahead and bring in her own stool sample.
That's daring for sure.
It's kind of stupid, really, but anyway.
Yeah, I think when I worked at the clinic, we would just take like swabs from underneath our fingernails and stuff and look at them under the microscope, and it was disgusting.
Yep.
The things that you'll see.
Well, that's a box. Yeah, you got to put that. Now, if you're in school doing that, you must have been putting this on really high power. These Demodex mites you can see on low power. Well, you know, like even 10X, you can see those pretty good.
There's even a page that I follow on TikTok right now where they swab fruit from the grocery store. And then they take it home and put it underneath the microscope and show you all the bugs and parasites and
that's
the
why
food.
You're supposed to wash your stuff before you eat it. Yep.
It's enough to make you a germaphobe for sure.
Well, and that kind of leads into the next part of this whole thing is that kind of what we're seeing sometimes with this compounding. We were having a conversation before we started this about compounding. Compounding is where there's a drug that's not available in the United States sometimes, or if it is available, it's so expensive people can't afford it.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about D-penicillamine, you know, the stuff we use to chelate dogs that have copper storage disease. We talked about that before.
Helps chelate the copper in their liver.
Yeah, so the real stuff is $3,000 a month, but you get the compounded stuff, it's about $100 a month.
Yeah.
So it's really an affordable way to do something that's not very affordable. So you compound it. So that drug comes in 250 milligrams per pill. So what you have to do is, like when we do the pills, we either do them 225s or 275s or 300s. We have to make them in a pill that's not the same strength as the one that's commercially available.
Right.
So I know somebody wanted to do 250s, and I see what they'd done one time is 30 of the 150s and 30 of the 100s. Mm-hmm. So that's the way they did it.
Is that they do it?
Yeah, pardon?
Is that a new way that they do it? Or have they been compounding drugs
they've been compounding drugs for a long time. In fact, I'm like, who could possibly make a living doing this stuff? And quite frankly, now we have all sorts of things. Like gabapentin, which is a neuropathin. We use it as a pain med. But you got a teeny tiny little dog, and it comes to small succumbance, 100 milligrams. So we call it tiny tabs, 25 milligram, 50 milligrams. So we can titrate that down to where it's accurate, or we do a liquid.
And weren't we talking about that there's new regulations on this stuff?
Yeah, it used to be we just brought all this stuff in-house, and there were a lot of us there. I think there were 10 veterinarians in that building at one time, and so we used all of that stuff all of the time. And so when you brought a bottle out of it, there were 10 of us using out of it, so it never went out of date. We used it fairly rapidly and stuff. So we'll take, you know, for instance, there's some things that are in capsule form that are really, really too big for a really small pet to take. So then you compound that into a liquid.
Right.
The deep end, you can put that into a liquid. So if you had a really, really small dog, sometimes you put it in a liquid. A couple of Chihuahuas I treated, and I used liquid D-penicillamine. So there's places, the most popular, Roadrunner, Wedgewood, there's all sorts of compounding places. And what they'll do is they'll make it for you, and then they send it to you. Now they want to make it for the client and send it to the client and have the client buy it. Now, the problem with that is it's sort of not only it's kind of a pain in the ass, but it's now the client has to wait 3 or 4 or 5 days for them to process the order, compound it, and send it to them.
Yeah, that's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, well, if they got something that's critical, it's a real pain in the ass.
Yeah. But
so, I don't know. It's the government doing stuff.
And, right.
And
we always trust the government.
Well, we shouldn't, you know. You know what they've done now? I have to tell you this. They've done this crazy thing with mouse poison. Most mouse poison was made out of warfarin.
Okay. Toxic to dogs, right?
Well, yeah. It's an anticoagulant. So what happens when mice eat it, they eat enough of it, they eventually bleed to death.
Right.
When dogs eat it, if they eat it and they don't get the antidote, they eventually bleed to death. But most of the time, we kind of pick that up when they're starting to have nosebleeds or blood in the sclera of their eye or blood in their stool. Hey, we do a prothrombin time and then we take a history and we decide, you know, maybe this dog has warfarin poisoning. So we put them on vitamin K. There's an antidote.
Mm-hmm.
There is an antidote for warfarin.
Don't they make a rat poison now or a mouse poison that
There is no antidote. And the FDA's proud as hell that now the FDA's proud as hell we got something for rodents that there's no antidote for. So if a dog gets it and he's had it for a few days, he's toast. She's toast.
Yeah.
And they're proud of that. I, for the life of me, this is just common sense. Did the warfarin work? Yes, it worked. And how did they die? They bled to death.
That makes no sense that they would make a rat poison with no cure.
With no antidote.
No antidote.
Yeah. In the old days, in fact, when we got them when they were a long ways along, what you did is went and got a regular dog and borrowed some blood and gave them a blood transfusion. There's enough coagulant. Mm-hmm. You know, there's enough coagulant in the blood that would help with clotting. So that would give you a day. Maybe mm-hmm. a day and a half. In the meantime, you start your vitamin K with an injection and then follow up with pills for 3 weeks and you were home free.
What if your cat eats it? What if a cat eats a mouse that ate the rat poisoning?
That doesn't happen much.
No?
Nope. Well, it does.
I always wonder about that.
I don't think they can eat enough mice to have that be a deal.
Okay.
So I don't think I've ever, and clients have asked this question all the time. They can't eat really enough of that to make it happen.
Okay. Yep. That's good to know. I always worry about that.
Do you?
Yeah. If my dogs or cat ate a mouse that ate the mouse poisoning.
And clients are like, I don't know why he did that. Well, he didn't have anything else to do during the day when you're gone other than...
Oh, my dogs eat weird shit all the time.
Find out where you threw these things. Well, I threw it behind the couch. Well, and what happened?
Your dog...
Well, he went back there and got it and ate it.
Your dog, I hear, goes to... mom's work, Bosco, and he eats paper.
Yeah.
That's right. His new thing,
he's
paper.
An idiot. He's an idiot.
Well, you know, I'm starting to think, because he was in my house for a little bit, and I had a title for a truck that I own, and the title came up missing. And I was like, I know I didn't move it. I know I didn't move it. Now everyone's telling me he eats paper, so I'm highly suspicious that he ate the title. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing you got to do is if your dog eats rat poison or mouse poison, you got to take the box in when you go in to see the veterinarian.
To tell him which
poison
it is.
If you think yes, so you know what it is. So exactly what it is.
So what happens if they bring in the box and it's the it's the one that doesn't have an antidote?
Yeah, well, there's things you can do, but they're not very successful. Depends on how long ago they ate it. You know, that's the other thing. It depends on how long ago they ate it. And if they ate it a long time ago, we got big, big problems.
So how do you know if you go to buy mouse or rat poisoning?
Well, if it lists the antidote as K1, vitamin K1 is the antidote.
Okay, so it has it right on the label.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it'll actually list, I think the other box is if your dog ate this, call your veterinarian now. And because if he just ate it, you know, we can go ahead and give him something to make him... have an emesis episode where he vomits everything up and then hope that he can do much of it and then give him supportive therapy with IV fluids and all that sort of stuff.
You can't give him black charcoal or activated
charcoal? Yeah, inactivated charcoal. You could do that. Yep.
Okay. Well.
That's a big mess, by the way.
I know. It's gross. I've seen it once.
Yep.
Do you want to get into some rock and roll history?
Sure.
Today we got... The Righteous Brothers.
Yeah, people may or may not remember this song. Okay, this is not the Kingsmen. They're the ones that probably made it the most popular. But this is a group called The Righteous Brothers. Bill Medley and Bobby Hatfield. And they were popular when I was in high school. One did the real deep part, and the other guy did the... tenor. In fact, he was really kind of an ultra tenor, whatever you call him. Really, really did a nice job. And I went to see them one time in 2003. They were coming to Kalamazoo, which is a town next to us.
Where'd they play?
At Miller Auditorium.
Really?
Yeah, well, they didn't really play because we got there and the cops were out there and the cops said, well, the concert's been canceled. And I thought, well, maybe... So I think there were four or six of us in the car. So we were like, That's what I told him. Boy, it's a bitch, isn't it? When you buy concert tickets, it just shows you how old we are. Is it by the time we get here, the performers are deceased or something? And that was what happened. Bobby Hatfield had taken some cocaine
and died.
Yeah, and he didn't show up for the show to take the car to the venue. So they went up. In fact, I even talked to the guy one time when I was at a fundraiser, I think, over there at the Radisson. And he says, yeah, we went upstairs and we unlocked the door, and then that bar was across. Mm-hmm. So then we had to get the cutters and cut the bar off, and we knew this wasn't good because—and he was. He'd died 2 or 3 hours prior to this. He'd taken some cocaine and took a nap. I don't know what that's all about. But anyway, maybe
Getting rested before a show.
I guess maybe that's a thing. But anyway, he was gone, which was really too bad. And I guess Bill Medley, the big tall guy,
mm-hmm.
and he did the song in, Dirty Dancing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did that. He did that.
I forget which song that is.
Anyway, so he was dead. And so, this is their most popular song. But the first song was Little Latin Loopy Lou, and actually Bill Medley wrote that song.
Really?
Yeah, and then it was performed by, I think, Paul Revere and the Raiders, and the Kingsmen made it popular and that sort of thing. And then this song obviously is from Top Gun. I don't know if you remember this. Tom Cruise was singing this to whatever his co-star in that.
You want to know something? I've never seen the original Top Gun.
Yeah.
I've seen the second one with Miles Teller.
Well, this was in it, and they were a very good group, and they got their name because they were playing for a whole company of Black Marines when they were in California, and they started referred to them that the Righteous Brothers. You guys are Righteous Brothers, and then they referred to the suits they wore. They think they wore some of those collarless coats. They referred to their sport coats as being Righteous, so they dubbed them the Righteous Brothers, and it just kind of stuck.
That's funny.
I think when they were in a band, they were called the Parlamores or something like that. Anyway, they were in a band together, and then the band broke up, and they just did stuff together. And they did a number of songs, and nothing made it until Little Latin Loopy Lou made it. I was the first one to make it, and this song was maybe a year behind it, and this was the bomb. I mean, it was probably number one for 3 or 4 weeks.
I've heard this song before, for sure.
Probably back in the time when the Beatles were here. So they probably bumped the Beatles off the charts, I would think. But anyway, good song, good group. There's only one of them now. And they keep partners up with somebody to do the Righteous Brothers stuff or half the Righteous Brothers stuff. Or anyway.
It's good music.
Yeah, it is. Very good.
I can't believe you went to go see him in concert and he died.
Yeah,
That's crazy.
I'll tell you who did the production on their songs was Phil Spector.
And, who's that?
Phil Spector was a guy. He was married to Ronnie of Ronnie and the Ronettes, and the Ronettes. And he invented what's called the Wall of Sound, where you did all sorts of, string things behind it, and horns, and just made it really sound like a whole orchestra. And he referred to his thing as the Wall of Sound. They're pretty famous for that.
That's cool.
Yep.
I like that. I don't remember this song from
anything.
I've heard it before. I know I've heard it before.
This is Bobby Hatfield here doing the high parts. Well, that's our rock and roll thing for the day.
It.
Great band, or great duo. Yep, and they died. We drove by the Radisson on the way back, and they had the news. All the news media was in front of the Radisson. I thought, I wonder what the hell's going on there. So we went down.
Died.
We went down and I think drank beer at the Burdick or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Anyways, too bad.
Well, RIP. Now we're going to get into our next segment, Information and Peace of Mind, where we're going to talk about UTIs and dogs, two of my dogs had just had UTIs. So,
urinary tract infection is what UTI stands for. So, so here in Michigan, here's how this all plays out. In Michigan, usually sometime in November, maybe the 1st of December, we get our first snow.
Mm-hmm.
And I can always tell it's a decent snow because there's usually 6 cars in the ditch on the way to work. Because Michigan's like every other state. We have a few morons, and they can't remember what it was like to drive 7 months ago in snow. So they it's completely not germane to them until they take the car and stick it in the ditch. And it isn't usually like they're just 4 or 5 feet off the road. It seems like they're...
No, they're like flipped over.
Yeah. Well, you can see where they've done donuts, you know, on the way off the road. Anyway, so that leads into... So I'm driving to work. So now I'm on my way to work and thinking, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking, I'm going to get some urinary tract infections today because now there's snow in the ground. And people walk their dogs outside, and if there's blood in the urine, they go, oh, my, look at, there's blood in my dog's urine.
And because otherwise they wouldn't be able to tell.
And they're like, it just happened. I'm like, probably didn't just happen. It's probably been going on for a long time. But he's been peeing in, or she's been peeing in a pile of leaves, and you don't really see...
The blood in the urine.
Yeah, you don't see the blood in the urine. But now it's white outside, so now you're going to see that. So usually what we do is we bring him in and collect a urine sample, but... And I know what you're thinking, it's just a urinary tract infection, but it can be all sorts of stuff. So I think that's what we have. That's what we ought to talk about today. We need to talk about the dogs in two segments, girl dogs and boy dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the girl dogs.
Don't they get it a lot more frequently?
Yeah, they get it a lot more, just like people. You know, you don't ever go to a party and hear boys talking about their urinary tract infections. If you do, that's probably one you should go home early from. Okay.
Oh.
Got that?
Got it.
Okay. And then what you do is you get a urine sample and you analyze it. And there can be all sorts of things in there. What we're really looking for is blood, white blood cells, which would indicate you have an infection.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'll be a bacteria, either rods or cocci bacteria. So we're looking to see what kind of bacteria in there, you know, how many white cells. And we're looking for to see if there's any stones, any fragments of urolith or bladder stones.
Okay, maybe this is a weird question. Are bladder stones the same thing as a UTI for male dogs?
Well, I'll get into that.
Kind of?
I'm going there.
Because I don't know.
So then what we do is we determine if they've got a urinary tract infection and they have a fair amount of that, the struvites or crystals.
Right.
They've seen, and then sometimes we'll actually x-ray those dogs and make sure they don't have bladder stones. Because if they have bladder stones, and bladder stones in a female dog are very frequently the result of having had an infection for a long period of time. You get a bladder stone called a struvite. And I can tell you, there's been a number of years since I did this one, but I mean, I had one dog that we took a bladder stone out of a big dog, really big dog, and it was as big as a bar soap. Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And this thing, this is, you won't want to hear this part, so I'm going to tell it anyway. Then, so I put this in a bag, I wash it all off. First thing I do is wash it off and clean it off after I get done.
Mm-hmm.
After I get done taking care of the dog. And this dog, I don't know where this dog was putting his urine because it wasn't any place in the urinary bladder. The stone took up the whole bladder. So this dog had a, you know, really distinctly smaller volume that it could hold because of the bladder stone being in there.
Right.
So we surgically took the bladder stone out because that wasn't going to go away. And then every once in a while, I take this to show and tell. Some kid would open up the bag and he goes, man, it stinks in here. Well, it's all that urea that's stuck in the stone, and there's bacteria stuck in the stone.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is you treat those dogs with antibiotics for a couple of weeks. And then lots of times, if you think this is going to happen again, you just keep looking for urinary tract infections. And if they have urinary tract infections, once they have them for a period of time, they'll start to make the stones again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a problem on boy dogs because as the stones go out, they got to go through the penis, which is a much narrower,
mm-hmm.
narrow way of getting out. And it can be all sorts of different kinds of stones, urates, they can be struvites, they can be...
what do they look like when they come out? I've never seen a tract stone.
Struvites are kind of real smooth, almost like a polished stone.
Okay.
You know what a Petoskey stone looks like?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of a white Petoskey stone.
Okay.
And they're real smooth. The other ones are real bumpy and they look like somebody who invented jacks invented these stones.
Yeah.
And they really are painful because as they go out, they tumble through there and they're really sharp. Sharp, yeah. So we know, then our big question is why did that dog get a urinary tract infection? Very frequently they're the result of an obese dog that has this, instead of having a normal vagina, you could just look at when you hold the tail up and see it. This thing's like in the depths of a cave because all the fat is condensed around the vagina. Mm-hmm. So you have what they call now a hooded vagina. So there's a skin hood that comes over the top of the vagina, and that actually allows you to accumulate bacteria.
Well, what about dogs that are in heat? I feel like because they get so puffy.
Yeah, they don't. I don't see that kind of a problem with them in a general rule, you know. But and like in horses, if the vagina comes right straight down, that's a good thing. But if it lays flat like that, there's chance for stool to fall in that crevice.
And get infected.
And so a lot of it is the confirmation of what the dog's vagina looks like and how accessible it is to the outdoors. But when you get those things that, like, you pull that hood back over the top of, you know, when you're looking at it, and oh my gosh, we refer to it sometimes as lip fold dermatitis.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all this syrupy crap on there.
And, right.
You see that, and you know right away. So you got two choices. Tell them to let their, you know, treat the urinary tract infection. Tell them to get about 15 pounds off their dog, or 10 or 8 or whatever they got to do. And then the vagina go back to being normal.
I wouldn't expect that the obesity that would cause the urinary tract.
Oh, yeah.
That surprises the hell out of me, to be honest.
Yep. Well, I mean,
I thought it was dehydration.
If you've ever seen really fat people in a nursing home, you know, they have the lip folds. You know, mm-hmm. they have where they sit up in bed and watch TV.
Yeah.
There's folds there.
Right.
And if they don't shower, or if they don't have, you know, if they're not kept clean, those things will get infected too. So what happens is those things get infected. Now, they make these wipes. You can kind of wipe off all that and everything. Mm-hmm. Be honest with you. Sometimes what sometimes if they're really bad and the people aren't going to get the weight off the dog, we have to do a facelift on the vagina.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. So you just go... Episioplasty, it's called. There's a real nice name for it. It's basically what Joan Rivers got done, except on the back end. So, yeah. I hope,
rest in peace, Joan Rivers.
I hope she's not listening to this. She won't.
Isn't she dead?
She's deceased. Okay. That's right. Sometimes best if you're going to say things that are inappropriate to talk about.
Wait till the person's dead.
To wait till they've left this earth. That's correct. So, so then what you have is this. So here's the vagina sitting like this. And what you do is just take all the skin off
and just
pull it up.
Pull it up and
suture it.
Kind of, okay.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Okay, I have a question. One of my dogs has a crooked vagina. Does that affect anything?
No, I'd have to look at it. But
it's Ella.
Yeah.
Even like you can see it, it's just tilted to the side.
Well, anything that would allow stuff to get in there would create
UTIs. I've never seen anything like that.
Yep. Yeah, I don't think we're going to do surgery on that.
No.
So let's go over to talk about the boys, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so the boys, you can put the boys in two groups, neutered males and unneutered males.
Does it matter?
Because the unneutered males will have prostates. And lots of times that blood's actually coming from the prostate because the prostate's infected or inflamed.
Oh.
So boys don't get urinary tract infections very often because the penis... it's not self-cleaning. Here's the bladder, and here's the urethra, comes all the way out and comes all the way down, and then comes to the penis, and then it goes through the penis. So have you ever seen anybody canoe up Niagara Falls?
Never.
Okay, so that's the bacteria really have a hard time getting up into that bladder.
Yeah.
Because it's such a long ways to go.
Okay.
In a female, it's that far.
It's very short.
Yeah.
Okay.
And really, a lot of it has to do with the, you know, what is the general health of the bladder? We got to talking about it. I want to be careful what I say, but not that careful. Anyway, if you put 100 women in a building or at a party and you served them something alcoholic, within a half hour, that someone would be talking about their urinary tract infection. So,
yeah.
But, and then if you did the whole thing a year later, let's say it was five women a year ago, it'd be the same five women talking about the UTIs. Many women go to their grave without ever having a urinary tract infection. And then some women will have had 50 by the time they go to the grave. And so that's the whole difference. So a lot of it has to do with what is your immune system like? Are you predisposed to getting urinary tract infections?
I have a question. Do the males ever get urinary tract infections from being obese?
No.
I was going to say.
Don't have a vagina. I mean, yeah.
So it's just the females from being obese.
Right. So here's the bladder, and And the urethra goes to the outside, and it isn't very far. So it's just, so when the females get it, it's what we refer to as an ascending tract infection.
Okay.
It finds its way from the inside to the outside, which brings up another point. When they get old, when females get old, they don't produce a lot of estrogen anymore in their adrenals. They're probably spayed, but they were producing.
Does it matter if they're spayed or not?
Oh, yeah. If they're spayed, they're much more likely to be incontinent because of the lack of female hormone. So now that thing is not, it's kind of leaking urine, and it's allowing urine to go out. It's also allowing stuff to go back in when the hole lets the urine out. So,
right.
So you've got this thing going back and forth. So I think incontinent dogs are much more likely to have that also.
Okay.
So, and that's really kind of a chicken and the egg thing. We really don't know what came first, the urinary tract infection or the incontinence. But females become incontinent, a lot of them. And we'll have to put them on an antihistamine called Proin, phenylpropanolamine. Phenylpropanolamine was...
And explain incontinent to people that don't know what that is.
Incontinence means you lay there and wet yourself uncontrollably.
Okay.
That's incontinence.
There you
okay?
go. And that happens later on in life for most of these
It can
dogs.
Happen. It can happen at 2 or 3 years of age with a dog that was spayed 2 years ago.
Really?
Yep.
I did not know that.
Yep. So you can put them on Proin, which is phenylpropanolamine. I'm going to try to remember what that used to be called. It was a weight loss thing. Golly, I hate this part. Anyway, there was a weight loss drug made out of phenylpropanolamine. And really what happened is it got to be where it was misused. Athletes and stuff would use it to jazz themselves up to play a football game and stuff, make their heart race every once in a while. They've had a heart attack and die because they take phenylpropanolamine. So they...
Was that a legal thing to take?
Yeah, you could buy it over the counter.
Okay.
I can't remember what it was called. Oh, anyway.
Oh, well.
Phenylpropanolamine. You people at home can look it up. Phenylpropanolamine.
I can look it up really quick.
Yeah. In the old days. Phenylpropanolamine in the old days. But anyway... So the phenylpropanolamine went away. So then we didn't have anything that we could really use very often to, you know, prevent this leaking. So then we went to using diethylstilbestrol, which is a female hormone. So currently we have phenylpropanolamine back now. It's called Proin. We'll either give that once or twice.
Alka-Seltzer.
No, not Alka-Seltzer.
It says such as Alka-Seltzer. Ugh.
No.
Cold medicine.
Phenyl. P-H-E-N-Y-L. Phenylpropanolamine. What was it called? Yeah, it's not a cold medicine, though.
It says it's in cold medicine.
It might be. Anyway, yeah, see right here it says phenylpropanolamine. It could be a risk for stroke. Because some of these people, if they have hypertension, this is a big, it causes a big problem.
Yeah.
I don't think it's available for people anymore, but it is available for dogs. Anyway, so that's what we'd use, or we'd use female...
Treat nasal congestion.
Or we, yeah, it's an antihistamine. And we could go ahead and use it, you know, really, the phenylpropanolamine, that's about the only reason we ever use it is to prevent incontinence. It doesn't really work very well in male dogs. We also use DES, diethylstilbestrol, used to be used for cattle as a growth promotant, and we use that. And you give a pill every day for 3 days, and once a week or every 10 days or every 15 days, something like that. That works beautifully also. Because usually what happens is when you're now you've had a hysterectomy, you're spayed.
Okay.
And what you no longer make estrogen out of your ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
But most women make a little bit of estrogen out of their adrenals. So what you have up here, you have cholesterol to come down, and it'll turn into... estradiol, okay? Not very much of it, but just enough to
estradiol
keep you kind of,
is...
And eventually it comes all the way down and turns into cortisol. But it's almost like a highway, like a wheel of 994. You know, we got big exits like 131 and 69. But then we got the Beta Lake exit. So the Beta Lake exit would be just a few cars get off there, and that's the estradiol exit. So you make a little extra estradiol. Now, if for some reason or other, nobody gets off the... If that exit means you're not making any estradiol, then you may become incontinent.
Mm-hmm.
Become incontinent, you'll get urinary tract infections. Okay, though, on the boy side, what we get is we get the blood and urine sometimes because of the prostate. Sometimes they have urinary tract infections, but not very often. Or they could also have bladder stones that make calcium oxalates, struvites, but it's probably much more common that they've got a prostate that is enlarged and making blood in the prostate.
Okay.
And prostatitis.
Okay, so hypothetically, your dog gets a urinary tract infection. I normally know that mine have urinary tract infections because they either pee in their crate or I see them squat like 4 or 5 times.
That's the number one reason. Stop and squat, stop and squat, stop and squat. And yeah. They're not marking. They're just, what they're painful when they urinate and it feels better.
Yeah.
So they try to urinate again to make it feel better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ella whines every once in a while. Because she just had one not too long ago and you gave me medication for it. But she would pee and whine when she was peeing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what's that about?
Well, for those that are listening, I got news for you. There's a reason they make soup ladles, and it's to catch urine from female dogs. Mm-hmm. Not so much for the gravy thing on Thanksgiving, but you use a ladle.
It's so hard to catch us.
You put a ladle underneath them, and don't jump at them. Get the ladle, and then pour it in a clean jar, and take it to your veterinarian's office within at least an hour or so, and ask to have a complete urine analysis done. And then you find out. And listen, you can tell a ton from your urine analysis. You can tell whether there's sugar in the urine, whether there's protein in the urine, like you're having kidney issues, whether there's white cells, red cells, bacteria, stones, bilirubin, all sorts of stuff. So there's I think probably of all the tests we do, I get more bang for the buck on a urine analysis than I do anything else.
What point do you run a urine analysis? Like what?
When I think they're having urinary tract problems.
Is that the only reason?
Here's the problem in our business. People say, well, my dog's drinking a lot of water and urinating a lot. How long has he been doing that? 4 months, 8 months. Really? Why are we looking at it now? Why did we not look at it a month after this started?
Mm-hmm.
Because now they're in kidney failure, they got diabetes, they've lost 15 pounds or whatever. I mean, it's like crazy.
Okay, so you can tell a lot from a urinary tract infection.
Yeah, yeah, ton. Yeah. If you just look at it, take the time to look at it. Are you concentrating in your urine, which means are you in kidney failure? Are you diabetic? Is there blood in there? Is there urobilinogen? Are there ketones because you're losing a lot of weight? Are there stones? Are there cast because you got damage to your kidney? I mean, there's a ton of stuff you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes if the veterinarian says, listen, I haven't got an opium for 4 or 5 days, you know what? Ask them if they'll just take a urine sample from you and take the urine sample. We do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes we'll do the blood work later to back up what we found in the urine analysis.
Right.
Kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yep. Have you ever seen anything weird from your analysis or colored urine?
You keep doing this. Everything's, you get new stuff every time. Yeah. So, yeah.
I just saw a question online. I followed this dog forum that people post their questions and it gets answered. And somebody was saying that their dog pees out in the yard and it turns the grass orange.
Yeah, they're on a high protein diet.
Is that what that is?
Well, usually it's real concentrated lots of times. So the more concentrated you are, if you don't drink very much and you eat something that has a lot of protein in it, there'll be a lot of urea in your urine. So yeah, you'll kill the hell out of the grass when you do that.
Huh.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yep. So for all you boys out there, pee on the cement.
That's right.
If your wife's going to catch you peeing anything, make sure it's not something she's been trying to keep alive.
You pee on the bushes, or so I've been told by mom.
Yeah, whatever.
Nice oriental bushes.
Yep, yep, yep.
All right, we're going to go into the last segment of the day. Normally we do label lies, but today we're actually going to talk about specific ingredients, and we're going to go with meat and bone meal.
Yeah, you know, that's not a great... I do this all the time. I say, listen, your dog's got allergies, so it can't have beef, blah, blah, blah. Or can't have beef, milk, or wheat. So they'll come back and say, wasn't any beef, milk, or wheat in the food? And it's like, okay, what's in it? Meat and bone meal. Well, that could be beef. It may not be. It could be pork. It may not be. It could be sheep. It could be chicken. It's hard to say what it is. It's meat and bone meal. The truth of the matter is, it's meat and bone meal. It's not very high quality. In fact, a lot of that's used like in kilns now and stuff for fuel to burn stuff in. It's just not worth it. You know, and the dog food companies are like, well, this is really good stuff, meat and bone meal. I mean, they try to sell us this stuff. I'm like, listen, do I look at the hair, man?
It's great.
It's gray, yeah. I can't get over why they think we would believe bean and bone meal is a good thing. It's just not a really good thing. And if you see it in your food, you're buying your food probably because it's inexpensive. And if that's what you can afford, that's what you can afford. I haven't got a problem with that. But you can afford better stuff, buy better stuff.
Yeah. I just talked to one of our clients recently, and they said something about sometimes when it says meat, like just generalized meat on the label of a dog food bag, that it could be roadkill.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, they actually...
If it's roadkill, it's going to be rendered.
Yeah, she was like, there's a company that picks up roadkill from the road. They take it to a rendering plant.
I don't think they use that for that. They may use it for fertilizer.
Okay. I was like, I don't know about that. And she was up and down. No, this is a whole deal. And I was like, I'll have to research it. I've never heard of that. But that, if that's the case, it's concerning. Because some of that roadkill sits out for
a long time.
Days.
Yep.
Ugh. Well, don't trust meat and bone.
Yeah. And man, you could have a dog that's eaten and you get a good bag. And then you get a bag and the ears break out. And you get another bag and the ears break out.
Is it just because it's different?
It's different meat. Yes, it's basically Old Country Buffet at the rendering plant.
Ew.
Yep.
I love the idea of Asian buffet before I go, and then afterwards I feel like shit because I eat so much and it's not good protein.
Well, it's probably good protein. It's just you eat too much.
Well,
it's treated with stuff too. I mean, it's usually got a lot of stuff on it. Yep.
I don't know if it's good protein or not, but the last one that I went to, it got shut down for health violations. So I can't imagine it's great.
Nope.
All right.
Well,
learned a lot today.
Yep.
Learned about some UTIs.
Yep.
Meat and bone meal. Chewable medications.
As soon as we get done with this, I'm going to go ahead and...
we're going to go get Asian buffet after.
I'm going to go to the bathroom, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's get some outro music going, shall we? This is my boy.
Marvin Gaye.
He was actually in a group called, he did a song called The Ten Commandments of Love. And I've heard that song. He was a kid in a band called Harvey and the Moonglows. Not a really big part in it, but he had a part in that band.
He's a legend.
Yep.
His music will live on forever, even on our podcast.
Yep. This is a great song.
All right. Go ahead and read our outro for us.
Okay. Hey, we're glad you guys showed up today and listened to us. We hope you're going to share some information with you that will help you with your animals. As much as we love them, they love you. So, don't forget, always treat the treatable and prevent the preventable. And we'll catch you in the next podcast.
And make sure you look out for UTIs in your dog.
Yeah. Stop and squat. There you go. It's a stop and squat, people.
That's right.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Hey, thanks for the help.